My name is Sherry, and I'm a grateful believer who struggles with codependency, pride issues, and the effects of abuse. I grew up in a loving Christian family. We attended the local Baptist church and were there most Sundays and Wednesdays. At Sunday school, I felt loved and cared for. At home, we had our issues. My dad worked hard to control his temper, and my mom had to work at being nurturing. I'm the oldest with a younger sister and brother, and I affectionately refer to myself as the bossy big sister. I wasn't always sweet to them, but we've forgiven each other for our mostly childish indiscretions. My entire family worked hard at getting along, and we're close to this day. Because of my October birthday, I started first grade when I was only 5. I hadn't attended kindergarten because it was only offered in private settings, and my baby brother was born the year I would have gone. I seemed smart and confident, and so my mother sent me to first grade. I knew only one other boy in my class, and I felt bewildered by all the other children. My last name was Wilson, and in September, I waited daily for my teacher to call my name to work with her. I waited, and I waited. I didn't think my teacher liked me. I understand now that she was probably calling on students for evaluations from an alphabetical list, and S or W would have been at the end of the list. I was such a people pleaser, and I was trying hard to do everything she asked. I couldn't understand why she wouldn't call my name. At home and at church, I seemed mostly confident, but I felt like an outsider at school. She eventually did call me, okay? But I remember the waiting was very painful. That same year, I was at church when Mrs. Smith invited children who wanted to ask Jesus to be their Savior to go into another room with her. I remember walking with her, but not being sure of what to expect. I knew that I had made bad choices and that those were called sin. I understood that sin separated me from an eternity with God. When I prayed with her, I knew that Jesus' death on the cross had paid for my sin, and I would now go to heaven when I died. I honestly don't remember feeling much different afterward, but I knew the decision I made was real, and I loved having a relationship with Jesus. In sixth grade, I turned 11 and faced some more trauma at school. I was the victim of what might now be called a mean girls incident. I worked up enough courage to try out for cheerleading, and thanks to a friend's campaigning, I won. This was quite an accomplishment for me. I was younger, I've shared that, and smaller than a lot of my classmates, and so my teacher nicknamed me Tiny. She could be quite cruel to others, but I was her favorite. She gave me a special place to sit and other social privileges. I loved all the attention, and I didn't really understand my classmates' hatred of this inequality. Because of this, I wasn't included in the sixth grade girls' in crowd, and I felt crushed not to be invited to birthday parties and other events. I began to feel that girls weren't very trustworthy as friends. This was a very traumatic experience for me. I was still a people pleaser, and I longed to have a friend who understood me and loved me anyway. I began to feel that females weren't quite that trustworthy. This was a crushing blow to any confidence I could muster in social settings. Because of where my home was located, the next year I went to the junior high, where I knew about 40 kids out of 900. I was still very immature, and I was intimidated by all those people I didn't know. I worried they would treat me unkindly. I felt like a little girl amongst much older acting students, and I struggled to fit in. Getting good grades and being involved in my youth group were the activities that helped my self-confidence. At summer camp, when I was 13, I realized that in my rush to be accepted at school, I was living a life not much different from girls who didn't know Jesus. I rededicated my life to Christ and prayed for a Christian best friend. God quickly answered that prayer with a girl named Kathleen. She would later be a bridesmaid in my wedding, and we've reconnected as friends on Facebook. In those junior high years, I developed an explosive temper. I was moody and hard to get along with at home. I didn't rebel outside of my family circle. I just made them all miserable. My mom couldn't handle my disrespect, and we fought constantly. For the first time, I felt uncomfortable at home. My sister recalls those years as loud and horrible. Neither my mom or I listened to each other very well. My mom felt disrespected and I felt unheard. I remember one battle when my dad listened to my side of the story and he backed me up. I felt empowered by his listening to me and I appreciated his reasoning with my mom. This reinforced my feelings that females could be hard to understand and few were safe to trust. By high school, I was truly longing for a special relationship with a guy. Remember, I didn't exactly trust a lot of girls. I had made some wonderful girlfriends by this time, but female dynamics were still somewhat mysterious to me. I'd begun dating, but I couldn't find that one steady boyfriend who would end my loneliness and make me feel better. I was pretty idealistic, as you can tell. I did discover in high school that I loved studying the Bible, and that I loved working with young children. I was still very involved in my youth group and was even in a small accountability group with two other girls whose names were also Sherry. I decided I would become a teacher and specialize in early childhood education. I decided to begin my studies at a private Christian college so I could take Bible classes and get my biology and psychology credits from professors with a Christian worldview. I ended my high school years so ready to leave my hometown. Surely the guys at college I was headed to would appreciate me, and I had a lot of fun in college. I tried out for and made the cheerleading squad. Since I hadn't been involved with cheerleading since grade school, I had a lot of skills to catch up on. It would sometimes take me an entire day to learn one cheer, and this was very discouraging to me. Another cheerleader took me under her wing, and I began to grasp all those moves. Because of all the extra practice, I managed to feel comfortable in front of a crowd by the time it was basketball season. I was noticed by one of the guys on the cheerleading squad. He asked me out to a sneeze and squeeze hayride. I went with him, but since he was coordinating the event, I spent the evening getting to know his friends. After the weekend was over, I began hearing that my date really liked me. Since he'd pretty much ignored me on the hayride, I told him no when he asked me out again. By the time I left that college 2 years later, that guy was my best friend. Toward the end of my sophomore year, he'd been flirting with a romantic relationship. I didn't share his feelings, but I did enjoy his friendship. After a summer spent in separate states, I returned to Oregon. It was obvious our feelings weren't mutual, so I honorably broke it off. I transferred to another college so I could specialize in early childhood education. I was incredibly lonely, and my best friend wasn't speaking to me. I poured all of my energy into my studies. After a few months, he and I were back to a very careful best friend status. A year later, we decided to be more than friends, and we were married the next summer. He won my heart. I was ecstatically happy. I graduated with my teaching degree before we were married and began teaching preschoolers. I loved being married and adored all the attention lavished on me. However, after only 6 months of marriage, we were seeing a counseling pastor for advice. What I discovered much later was that the hormones in my birth control pills were really accentuating my mood swings. My new husband thought he had married someone cheerful, and so he began yelling at me to stop being so angry. Neither of us appreciated the way we were being treated. The other couples who were married around the same times as we were didn't seem to be experiencing the same kind of conflict. The counseling pastor assured us that some couples did experience such conflict, and his encouragement kept us going until our first anniversary. We didn't, however, learn many skills to help us negotiate disagreement. I'd begun a home-based business to supplement my teaching income and visited company headquarters that summer without my husband. I traveled with a friend, and my husband was to pick us both up at the airport. He did meet up with us, but he was furious with me over some travel details that he did not know about. Once we were in the car, he began berating me in front of my friend, and I was horribly embarrassed. Once she was out of the car, the screaming began. Even the worst fights with my mom hadn't been this hard. I didn't know what to do, so I fled on foot as soon as we got back to our apartment. A friend later confronted me about this behavior. and I entered a lay counseling program at another church. There I learned more about my anger, and I worked on preventing it. This got me through the early years of our marriage, but we still heatedly fought. Once when my husband was driving us home, I was so incensed by his taunting that I threw a milkshake in his face. He responded by putting his fist to my nose, and our cycle of violence had begun. I justified his actions because I did throw the milkshake first. We became parents of a daughter in 1988 and another daughter in 1991. These were mostly happy years as we both loved children and we were thrilled to be parents. When I was pregnant with our oldest daughter, my husband confessed that we were $35,000 in debt. It was really more, but he couldn't admit to all of it. This meant that I would have to return to teaching after our daughter was born. My takeaway was that I was scared about finances, and I was afraid to trust what I heard. He began becoming more successful in his sales position, and his income was increasing. We remained living in a tiny duplex so we could pay off our debt. After our youngest daughter arrived, we discovered if we adjusted our lifestyles, less eating out, I could stop teaching and save our childcare expenses. I loved being home with the girls, but I was financially dependent. Following the birth of our daughters, I began experiencing trouble going to sleep. I was awake for many nights and had trouble coping with responsibilities the next day. Our fighting was escalating again, and one especially bad fight drove us back into counseling. We were fighting late one night, and my husband had pushed me down. We'd woken up both girls, and he threatened to take them. I was terrified, and I begged him to leave the girls behind. He did, and he slept at a family member's house that night. I was horrified that our girls had been exposed to violence, and I vowed that they would never see it again. These began our counseling years. We'd see a counselor, work on our issues, come to an impasse, and stop counseling. Then after another fight, we'd start seeing a new counselor. Because I didn't want abuse to be part of my marriage, I stuffed a lot of feelings. It just wasn't safe to express anger. We discussed legally separating, but our counselor at the time thought it would be too easy for us to never reconcile. So we didn't separate. I began seeing a different doctor and began an extremely helpful medical regimen that I still take. We paid off our debt and bought our first home. The girls began school, and I planned on returning to teaching. They were both diagnosed with ADD, and our youngest daughter also suffered from an undiagnosed learning disability. I felt it was important to stay home and coach my girls through school. In August of 99, on the way home from a camping trip, a friend confronted me about my husband's drinking. She said she'd been watching him and he'd been drinking to excess. She recommended that I try Al-Anon, and so I went. I was too afraid of my husband's reaction to let him know, however, and so I kept my attendance a secret. The group I visited had members whose loved ones weren't drinking any longer, and I didn't really feel like I could relate to their experiences. I did learn some information that helped me, but after about 9 months, I quit attending. On Easter in 2000, the church we were attending shared victory testimonies. One courageous man shared about his victory over alcohol. I found out who the name of the counselor he was seeing was, and I scheduled my own appointment. The first thing this counselor required me to do was to tell my husband that I was scared about the amount he had drank, that I'd been to Al-Anon, and that I was seeing a counselor about it. My husband did not retaliate, but he was very upset that I had not been honest. We both saw that counselor for one and a half years, until he retired from his practice. I had learned from Al-Anon that the only person I could change was me. Nevertheless, I was seriously disappointed that I didn't see many changes in my husband's behavior. I stopped attending couples counseling as I wasn't seeing much progress. We had both been assigned homework, but I felt like I was the only one working on issues. I began seeing a counselor on my own until I felt clear about how to handle my personal issues. When my husband was arrested for a DUI, I hoped this would be a catalyst for change. It really didn't happen, but he did stop driving after evenings of drinking. In 2001, we moved into our dream home. 2000 had been an extremely successful year for business for my husband. But when the stock market tanked, so did his income. A year later, he lost his job, and we spent the next 5 years preparing to sue corporate America. During this time, we had an especially violent fight after attending a party. I'd had it. I prepared to at least legally separate, if not divorce. Two friends convinced us to give it one more chance. We booked a trip to Mexico with a former pastor and his wife. We would scuba dive in the mornings and have counseling sessions in the afternoons. We were able to patch things up and keep our marriage going. There has been no more physical violence in our home. In 2007, my husband lost another job and I returned to teaching. In 2008, he won his corporate lawsuit, and yet he received no financial compensation to offset the huge litigation expenses. Our home went through foreclosure in 2015, and we're still recovering financially. In August of 2010, I'd had it again. We were living with unbelievable financial pressures, and I was frustrated that I couldn't seem to find personal or business success. A friend told me about a fantastic class that was here at Rolling Hills. The class she and I attended was a step study and part of Celebrate Recovery. I knew this is what I'd been looking for, a faith-based recovery program that acknowledged Jesus as our higher power. I thought the class was too large, but I'd been searching for a group with women who are currently struggling with issues. Since I was already familiar with the 12 steps, the 8 principles seemed a natural place to continue. My friend felt she wasn't ready for the class, but I kept coming. I didn't share much of my homework with so many other women, as I'd experienced a confidentiality breach in another group and I'd attended, and I had pretty serious trust issues. When it was time to ask others to be accountability partners, I felt so insecure that I sat and waited for other women to come up and talk to me. But they did. I had people to share my journey with. I began to feel that I could trust these women, which was a huge step in my recovery. My oldest daughter was getting married, and my youngest was leaving for college, and I really needed the support of these women. I felt I didn't have time for step study, my business, teaching full-time, and CR, so I didn't come to CR. I chose a sponsor outside the program, and this didn't work very well. I later asked my step study leader to be my sponsor, but I was grieved when my accountability partners moved on. I felt adrift when my step study ended. I envied those who'd seen dramatic growth. I began attending CR on Wednesdays and have ever since. My new sponsor encouraged me to seek out more information about my issues, and so I went to 2 other classes. I also completed leadership training and later began a new open share group for women who experienced abuse. It wasn't until I attended the leadership training with a national CR team at Saddleback Church that I caught the vision for my future. There is still conflict in my marriage that is difficult to resolve. We have a lot of debt to repay. I don't know what the future holds. In thinking about a particular principle that has helped my recovery, I always go back to principle 3. Consciously choose to commit all my life and will to Christ's care and control. The accompanying verse of Matthew 5:5 states, God blesses those who are humble, for they will inherit the whole earth. I struggle with surrender. I struggle to think that the difficulties I go through are part of God's plan. A year ago, I was confronted with a new issue to examine. Another friend, I have a lot of girlfriends now, heard me mention that I hate to ask for help. I think it comes from having questions shot down when I was younger. Her gentle and honest reply was, Sherry, that is pride. Because of my difficulties with self-confidence, I never expected to be confronted with pride. But she got me thinking. Then I realized that I don't even like to ask God for help, which is why surrender is so difficult for me. I realized that not asking for help meant that I was assuming I could do things on my own. which is also why I find myself stuck in so many areas of my life. Some verses that I recently rediscovered from the Message Bible are in Romans 8:5 through 8. Those who think they can do it on their own end up obsessed with measuring their own moral muscle, but never get around to exercising it in real life. Those who trust God's action in them find that God's Spirit is in them, living and breathing God. Obsession with self in these matters is a dead end. Attention to God leads us out in the open into a spacious, free life. Focusing on the self is the opposite of focusing on God. Anyone completely absorbed in self ignores God and ends up thinking more about self than God. The person who ignores who God is and what he is doing. And God isn't pleased at being ignored. After I wrote this, I was doing my Bible study today, and my Bible study leader, I'm studying Isaiah, and she made this statement, which I thought was pretty timely. She said, in Isaiah, God is dealing with pride, specifically pride of the nations, because it is the ultimate sin. It's independence from God, and it puts the focus on me instead of God. Since I knew the verse already that God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble, as stated in James 4:6, I was interested to learn that God gives further instruction in verse 7. Submit, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. It sounded a lot like surrender to me. God gives very clear instruction here on how to practice humility. I seek to humble myself, and I surrender to God's will daily. I am praying and working through these truths so that I can receive a one-year coin of experiencing victory over the issue of pride later this month. I still struggle, but I'm daily asking God for help. When I rail against God to take away my painful circumstances, mostly because I don't want to ask for help, I am forgetting about the wonderful future I have for all eternity with God. God promises that we will be rewarded for our suffering, but he doesn't promise that it will be here on earth. What I know is that my time in CR is not just to work on my insecurities or my pride or to move past the abuse. CR is a tool to help me connect with Jesus as my higher power. CR is a tool to remind me to surrender daily to God's will and not my own. To the newcomer, I say keep coming. Even if your recovery doesn't seem to be progressing as quickly as others, living, breathing God is inside of you if you are a child of it, if you are his child. I want to use the freedom in Christ I've been experiencing to change the way I deal with my future. Thank you for listening.